Monster Man, episode 395, Elephant and Elf.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And I know in the last section, I said, hey, we're done with a big, like, overarching section that has multiple monsters in it. Time to get, like, a little grab bag with plenty of variety. And then, it's actually 6 pages of elves. But we're only going to do 2 of those pages today. We're first going to talk about the elephant, and then we're going to take a look at the elf. So let's get started. To be honest with you, I don't have a lot to say about the elephant. I will say that this is a good example of one of the things that I do like about Monstrous Manual in terms of its organization, by which I mean that there are 4 different monsters encompassed within the elephant description, right? So we've got the elephant itself, we've got the mammoth, the mastodon, and the oliphant. One can still quibble about whether mammoths and mastodons are really different enough to be 2 separate monsters, but at least I don't have to go looking around. I mean, those monsters are in, off the top of my head, I want to say that they're in at least 2 different books. You know, if I want to decide which of the many varieties of elephant is going to be right for the game that I want to run. Once again, we get that weird thing about time periods, like the oliphant is a modern version of the mammoth, but like, there's nothing that says that mammoths have to have gone extinct in your fantasy world. It always strikes me as so strange to assume that the prehistory of a fantasy world is identical to the prehistory of our Earth when it's not similar in any other way. But leave that out, you know. You should definitely have mammoths in your game if you want. If you only want them to be in, you know, the frozen lands of the barbarian north or whatever, that's cool too. But other than that, there's nothing really too unfamiliar here. I mean, admittedly, there's almost an entire column of elephant facts, which, again, maybe in a pre-internet age would have been more useful, but also, like, in terms of animals that it's not that hard to find out information about, I feel like the elephant is one such. But this entry is fine, and I commend it for taking 4 scattered entries and combining them into one, even if I'm not wholly convinced that those 4 entries in their original books wouldn't still have wound up being shorter than the entry that we have here. Also, if you were going to illustrate just one of the 4 possible elephants, I really feel like the African elephant is like the least interesting kind. You could have had a mastodon. Next, we move on to the elf. Oh boy. So there are 6 total pages of elves here, but we're only going to cover the first 2, which is your sort of standard elf. Then we got the elf aquatic and the elf drow, which is interesting in and of itself. But so this is a very interesting, well, no, it's boring, but it's interesting why it is the way it is, I guess, because this entry focuses on the characteristics of elves in a very different way from some of the other ones. And it's a little peculiar because I would assume that most of this stuff about how, you know, elves have such and such kind of vision and they live to such and such age and so on and so forth, you know, would be in the player's handbook already. But I guess that this is another good example of the drive which I applaud, to putting all the rules that you're going to need to run an encounter in the same place. So that even if you wind up repeating yourself, you're eliminating the act of flipping back and forth at the table. The writing here is very characteristic of, I think, a dilemma that faces a lot of TSR writers during this period, which is that what they are trying to convey is essentially a series of facts. But they have been told to write in this kind of, like, faux academic term paper kind of style, the result being that this is just way longer than it needs to be, right? There's no reason that all this stuff about, like, elves have +1 with swords and bows, elves can see this far, they weigh this much, right? Like, there's no reason this can't all just be a series of bullet points, but instead it's given as a rolling narrative, which is the worst way to organize it if you want to look stuff in it up, right? If you ever find yourself wondering, huh, how much does an elf weigh? Hard to imagine the circumstances. About the same as a human, but a little less will do you just fine. But in the event that you ever did, this would not be a good way to find that information. But whatever, it's sacrificing that for consistency with the tone of the other sections of the book and indeed of this entry, which you might think is a bad idea, and I do, but they're definitely, that's what they're doing. But you could cut at least a fifth and possibly more of this elf entry and not lose anything. It reminds me a little bit of a student trying to hit a word count. Having said that, as much as I'm not a fan of the writing style, I think that there's actually some quite interesting information in this entry, and that it's presented in a way that tells us a little more about what this game expects elves to be like, which I like. So one of the core ideas that runs through this whole thing is the idea that elves are effectively immortal. You know, they live incredibly long lifetimes compared to humans and even other non-humans like dwarves or half-elves. And there's even a going into the West bit, right? Even at the end of their lives, they don't die, they just leave the material world. Or this part of the material world, anyway. It's very hard to see how this reconciles with any D&D campaign world, but whatever. So that's an echo of the tragic kind of Silmarillion and then, you know, Warhammer elves, whereas most of what's about the elves in here is a bit more akin to kind of Hobbit elves, right? Those fa-la-la-la-lally something down in the valley guys who are much more cheerful and carefree. And again, this is kind of connected to the idea of their immortality. So on the one hand, they have this dignified and noble culture, but on the other hand, they're pretty chilled out because they live forever. It's not that they don't want to do things, it's just that they're much slower paced than other people. If they want to spend a day admiring the blossoms on the trees or listening to the trilling of the brook as it ripples through the glen, that's what they're going to do. If they want to spend a day hunting and just feeling the leaves under their boots and smelling the forest turning to autumn once again for the 500th time they've experienced it or whatever, then that's what they're going to do. And a lot of, oh, and it also says that because of this, they're also like kind of jaded. They're very fascinated by magic, even though it doesn't work as well on them as it does with other people, which I thought was an interesting touch. As a result, they value kind of curiosities a lot more than other things. So if, like, if you bring an elf a big sack of gold, they would actually not value that as much as some magic item that they've never seen before, even if that magic item is nothing more than an amusing novelty. Because one of those things is theoretically interesting, and the other one is just a big sack of gold. And they've seen a big sack of gold before. Even if the big sack of gold is, like, more potentially useful, this one's more interesting, right? It's like the Homer Simpson finding $20. A big sack of gold can be used to buy many interesting trinkets. But, you know, that's whatever. Like, that's the kind of, like, grind mentality, short-term thinking that people who probably aren't going to live to 100 have. It's not the kind of thing that high elves have, you know? If they need a big sack of gold, they can always get one later. This also ties into some mention of half-elves here, because half-elves are caught in this kind of, like, double tragedy. Because on the one hand, elves view them with sadness because if you have, like, a half-elven child, you're going to outlive your half-elven child, and that's terrible. You have brought mortality into your family bloodline by falling in love with a human. So you can imagine how much you must love that human in order for that to be the case. So that's fun.
But also, because half-elves are long-lived compared to humans,
they also have to accept that the humans that they themselves grow attached to, they will outlive them. So they will outlive the mortals that they love, but be in turn long outlived by the elves that they love. Which is, you know, now, this is seldom something that's going to come up in-game, because most campaigns don't take place over the timescale that would make those things relevant. But again, this all kind of goes toward characterization, which is nice. There's a lot of information here on how the different features of being an elf affect their outlook and their behavior, and to some extent, their politics. And I like that, because it suggests that most of the time, you know, the way that you're going to be interacting with an elven community is through diplomacy. So let's give you some sense of what they like, what they're interested in, what kind of people they like, what kind of people they don't like. Terrific. I'm not wild about this illustration. It feels kind of generic. It's unusual that an entry in Monstrous Manual shucks the bread and butter style of most of the book to give you a little bit. I mean, it's still bread and butter style, but it has enough kind of material in it to paint you a little bit of a picture of elves kind of withdrawing from the world in their forests, keeping a careful eye on it, but choosing a lot of the time to live in kind of aesthetically pleasing romantic solitude. And then we get a picture of like, hey, here's an elf, like he's standing in a police lineup. It hardly conveys the romantic loneliness or ageless wisdom that this whole entry has just spent two pages establishing. He just looks like some dude. Like, I feel like I'm constantly bagging on this artist. It's not a bad illustration. It's just bland. And I feel like it's an editorially mandated blandness. I feel like, you know, he got a checklist that said, draw an elf. So an elf is what he drew. But I do like, you know, if I had to take away one thing from this, I like the idea that it's not that elves are suspicious of or look down on humans and whatever, but that they find it hard to relate to them, which is how it's described here. And I really like that. It goes some way toward, I mean, look, I run elves as awful snobs in my games, the same as everybody else. I like to run an elf you can hate, but it's fun to take a more nuanced view sometimes and just say like, oh yeah, this elf comes off as snobbish to you, but actually he's just struggling to figure out how he's supposed to interact with you. So that's nice. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we've got a special listener episode. It's a seasonal special occasion episode. And then, in the episode after that, we're going to be taking a trip to my favorite fantasy setting that isn't the game around your table, which is Glorantha. I mean, unless Glorantha is the game around your table, but I mean, my favorite fantasy setting is the one that you created, and my second favorite is Glorantha. So I hope that you'll join me for both of those, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters. Because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.